Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety.
And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your host, Leslie M. Scott Jones. Oh, that's not the... We talked about... That's not the old...
That's not the old school opening, Clinton.
Okay. I totally went on... I totally went on autopilot. Okay, let's try it. Let me try that again. Reboot. Try number two. How did we start? Welcome to Homegrown. Something like that. Whether you're an art maker, art breaker, art faker, or art partaker. Welcome all, because all are welcome to Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your host, Clinton Johnston, and... the woman so huge, she needed a hyphenated last name, Leslie M. Scott Jones.
Oh, well, thank you. Good morning, Clinton. How are you?
Fine, Leslie. I'm on autopilot.
That's okay. Autopilot is okay for you. That works. You know, I mean, other people, autopilot might be a problem, but no, for you, it's awesome. So, yeah, David's not here. If you hadn't picked that up yet.
Evil David.
No, he's not evil David. You know, we are all working artists. And sometimes.
Although not really working as artists.
Right. Sometimes that pesky 9-to-5 gets in the way.
Oh, the day job.
So, you know, we're without David. So guess what? You don't get to be like yelled at today at the beginning of the show, which is, you know, it's okay.
You know what I want? I want that to be the my new curse, which is
your new curse.
Day job.
I drop something on my foot.
Day job.
Little fender bender on 29.
God, day job.
We're going to make it a curse word. We're going to make it something that no one is supposed to say. That's what we're going to do. It's going to have to be like bleeped out. Yes, it's going to have to be bleeped out of all everything. No one can say it. It's very hush hush, very taboo. All right. We've got an interesting show today. Only because one of our guests got their flight got delayed. So they're going to call in. In the middle of the show, so you know there may be some technical difficulties. I'm just saying that up front, just letting you know clarity is important. so yeah, but right now we have, oh my goodness, the fabulous Perry Medlin and the fabulous Austin Roby from Young Frankenstein of Four County Players, playing July 27th through August 18th. Oh my God!
Right?
Oh my God! Oh my goodness.
That joke never gets old either. At all.
Just because you like making horse noises. That's why.
I mean, I still laugh.
Yes. So, Young Frankenstein, tell me about it. Tell us all about it.
Sure. So this particular musical was based off of the Mel Brooks film. It opened in 2007, so it's, you know, it's about 10 years old or so, and it really opened in a time where the recession was just starting to hit New York, and it didn't get a huge reception the way that the other Mel Brooks musical, The Producers, did. But it's such a fun score and story, and it really kind of uses a lot of those great old horror movie gimmicks,
right?
And points fun at them in a way that only Mel Brooks does.
And you know, Mel Brooks, it's not going to be funny or anything,
right? It's not funny or raunchy or
no, of course not.
Totally historically accurate and appropriate,
and it stays very close to the film. So if you're familiar with the film, you'll see a lot of the same gags. And actually, Mel Brooks himself wrote the music to it, so it's you can imagine the way that translates.
So what's it like directing music that Mel Brooks wrote?
It's hilarious, and it is very true to him and to the story and to the scene that he sets there in the time period. It really is very funny.
So speaking of the music, I was gonna hold this back. I wasn't gonna ask, but I gotta.
But
I can't
ask.
But you ask.
Just gotta.
The producers
had Springtime for Hitler.
Right.
History of the World, if it ever gets made into the musical.
The Inquisition. Has,
yeah. The best Mel Brooks musical number.
I agree.
That he's ever done. But Young Frankenstein, the movie, only has You're the Top, as I remember.
And Putting on the Ritz.
Putting on the Ritz. It only has Putting on the Ritz, which I can't imagine that the musical got the rights to have.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's in there.
Oh, you can't do kidding. Frankenstein without Putting on the Ritz.
Right?
Big old tap number.
Well, because isn't that number public domain?
Oh, it can't be.
Is it not?
Well, maybe.
Well, I don't know.
Maybe,
either way, possibly. They got the rights to do it.
But an observation, not necessarily a complaint, but an observation that people have made of Mel Brooks' musicals is that the music that he has written, the additional music that he's written for the musicals, not always quite as fun as the original songs. How is the music for Young Frankenstein?
Something that I noticed though is that if you go back and watch the movie, there are little moments where, like, somebody hums a little bit of a random song, like for the hayride, when Terry Garr's character gets into the hayride and she just kind of rolls around a little bit, and she's just like a roll, roll, roll in the hay, which then Mel Brooks turned into a huge hayride number for
right.
the show. So it is, you know, it goes back to the source material, but it kind of does further it.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, the women that originated the roles in particular, Megan Mullally and Sutton Foster, you know, the music really was written to showcase their talents.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's just two of the characters that have these incredible numbers. But it really does showcase, you know, amazing range and really sort of all the best of modern musical theater.
And Andrea Martin as well from the Broadway cast, who took the Cloris Leachman part of Frau Blücher, who's also got, I won't give away her song, but I'm sure you can probably guess if you know her character storyline, but she's also got just a really, really great sort of like Marlene Dietrich style
right.
cabaret-ish number, which is also really, really great too.
So we were talking earlier before the show started about the set, and apparently it's huge.
It is. It is a Carrie Moran triumph.
Really?
It is, yeah.
Okay, so for those people out there who don't know the story of Young Frankenstein and have never seen the movie, you know, been living under a rock for a while.
Right.
Where is it set?
It is set in Transylvania in 1937. So this is several years after the death of Victor von Frankenstein. And follows the story of his only living relative who has inherited the castle, and how when he comes over to deal with the estate, how he gets sucked into this family business. So it's the New York transplant into what feels like sort of 18th or 19th century Romania.
The land that time forgot.
The land that time forgot.
Awesome. I can't imagine at all how a New Yorker would deal with that. No. what has been the biggest challenge of doing this show? Because it's a huge musical. It's got a huge set.
So we were talking about the set earlier, and one of the things that I'll just say is a huge credit to the company and to the community is just seeing the ways that the community and all of these really skilled laborers have come together to pull this incredible set together with lights and a rising table and all of the electricity.
You would think that would be something that had to be said, but hey.
Well, it completely exceeded my expectations, I would say.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's such a testament to the support that the community provides to this theater. But I will say one of the things that has been so interesting has been the ways that as the set has grown and changed and come to fruition, that we have to sort of figure out how things should move across the stage and how we plan for movement in light of this growing monster.
We really, we really kind of started off with, well, let's create a skeleton of what, you know, what these things should look like, but let's not do set anything too in stone, because every week we've got new information. Every week we learn something new about how something's going to work, and it changes things. So we've the cast has done a really great job about remaining flexible and not being too upset when all of a sudden we say, okay, well, now you're going to have to actually go the other direction and go off stage through here instead of through here. And so they've done a really, really great job about kind of staying on their toes and adapting.
So, I mean, if anybody knows the movie, there's a lot of people in the movie. How many are in your cast?
20. Mm-hmm. We have 20.
That's huge.
That's... Yeah, and to be full disclosure, I probably, if in a perfect world, would have gone for about another 10.
Ah!
I would have. I mean, in a perfect world with a perfect budget, I would have gone with for about 10 more. Mm-hmm. My costume designer probably would have killed me.
Can we dig into the previous statement for a moment? Talk about, because we frequently like to give people who aren't familiar with the artistic process a look behind the scenes and what it's like. Talk about the importance in terms of building theater, in terms of building art, of being flexible, and how much is it about you set out your path, you pursue that path, and how much is it about, oh, okay, all that's out the window, now we've got to deal with this.
Well, one element that requires a lot of flexibility too is just that in any summer show with a volunteer cast, you almost never have everybody there. So, you know, each rehearsal is always also sort of figuring out, there's this ghost that stands beside me, and I, like, A, need to remember where they're going, because I need to tell them when they get back. But also, it's sort of this shifting cast that all comes together in the last week. That's another element of that flexibility that is required.
We've been really, really good about... social media has done a really great thing in that we can now create, like, these pages where we can post all of our rehearsal videos and things like that, which, like, I didn't grow up having... use of people weren't going to make videos of things I could access online, so that's actually really, really handy.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we've been doing the same thing with Black Mac.
Yeah.
We'll record it and we'll send it to you. Yeah, yeah.
Which is helpful when people do, you know, because summer's a time when people want to travel and
family vacations and all that, and you don't want to take away from that.
I mean, those sound wonderful. I hope someday I get to go on a vacation.
Me too. I just planned mine.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
That's been really, really helpful. And then
I would say we have
the question, didn't you?
I did, man.
The cast has been really remarkable to stay really flexible and to be open to changing, to trying things out, to writing their notes and to learning it all, you know, on their own time at home, and then coming in and always being prepared and being open to receiving new notes and new directions as they go.
They've also been really great about making choices about, you know, I like to create like a framework where it's like, okay, this is what you're basically doing, but now that you have those basics, like, come in and try something.
Yes.
Try something different every day, and we'll see what works. And we've got a really, really a fantastic cast of people that are doing just that, where every day, you know, we've been able to do a few runs already, and already, you know, we're seeing each show is a little bit different. They're trying new things, and some of it works, some of it doesn't, but that's part of the discovery process.
That's part of the fun, though, too, you know, especially in community theater, like, you know, getting to, like, kind of stretch yourself in that way, especially
characters
as an actor.
Yeah.
And I feel, like, knock on wood, but to be, we're in a place now where that's really... we're at the fun part of it right now,
where
we've got another week before we start tech, and the show is on its feet, and so now it's refining and figuring out those little
tightening up
bits.
Moments,
because kind of a Mel Brooks musical is full of gags
full,
and bits,
full of it,
and
yes.
So finding all of those and finding the rhythm of them has been really fun.
So the other, well, I'm not going to say, well, maybe it is the one of the fun things about Mel Brooks, and especially this musical, the makeup challenge.
Yeah.
Yes.
Without giving too much away.
Right.
We do have a, We've got a plan in the works. That's going to kind of really come to fruition a little more when we get closer and closer to actual Tech Week.
Right.
But we're trying to keep it as classic because when people come, they want to see the movie.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's one thing in particular that we want to try to honor
right.
is to keep that as close as possible.
Yeah. I mean, and when doing something like this that is at least for regular theater goers and you know, theater geeks like all of us in the room.
Right.
So in the zeitgeist, like, how do you balance giving them what they come expecting to see
mm-hmm.
and give them something that they didn't expect, that, you know, that they might go, oh, well, that's different than the movie, but actually that really worked. Like where's the balance? Like, how do you find that balance?
So I think there are just limitations when it translates to stage, right? And so some of that are accepting the limitations that we do have.
Yeah.
But also, we come in with our own expectations of what we want it to be and what we hope that these characters turn out to be. And so, I think sort of letting yourself run with your imagination in terms of what you imagine your character being and working together and finding that great energy between collaborators.
And also, the role of the ensemble in this show is so different from what it was in the movie. They're so much more prevalent in these created scenes like Frederick's Nightmare, where he's visited by all of his ancestors, which to fans of Four County last summer, it's going to feel vaguely familiar to Adam's family.
Okay.
It's going to feel a little familiar there. But, you know, that and, of course, Putting on the Ritz and this great number at the end of Act 1 where Igor is trying to distract everybody from the sounds of the monster coming to life.
Right.
And Transylvania Mania, which feels like an old Busby Berkeley number from, like, from one of those great movies. And that's actually another thing is we really looked at those old movies as inspiration
to get ideas.
Points,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, just the infusion of the music is this burst of energy into, you know,
right.
what we thought about from the movie. And so it carries so many of the great things from the movie, but then also has this whole new realm because of this music that is just contagious.
All right.
There's also we went back and found there's actual songs from these older movies that Mel Brooks really, really, I'm not going to say just completely copied, but are heavily inspired by. Like, you can hear, oh, that's the exact same melody right there. All right. That makes sense.
All right. Well, we're going to pay a bill or half a bill, depending on what we got going on. Well, just dust out for Bill. And we will be right back here on Homegrown.
Yes, yes. No, I'm not going to do that. No. Hey, this is A.D. Carson. You're listening to Homegrown, your show about local art on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
19 minutes past the hour, if you're just joining us. It's Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art here on 94.7 WPVC. We're meeting with Perry Medlin and Austin Roby, the director and music director, respectively, for Four County Players' upcoming production of the Mel Brooks musical Young Frankenstein. Dun, dun, dun. I believe that's Frankenstein. Frankenstein. So you were just talking about Mel Brooks and music and borrowing and borrowing from other tunes. I want to ask about these Mel Brooks musicals. I mean, so Mel Brooks is taking musicals from movies that he put out 40 years ago.
Mm.
But even then, because you mentioned Busby Berkeley, there's like Mel Brooks has, you can tell this is a man who has been in love with musical theater and been in love with New York theater in general. He's such a New York guy. And so has a history and familiarity that stretches back into the 50s and into the 40s. How much of his musicals feel like works of nostalgia, and how much are they actually representatives of modern musical theater?
I would say that they're very much nostalgic. He really is hearkening back, and when we look at these old videos, you can see where these themes come from, and part of that is going back to the time that, you know, in which this story is presented. But he does a really nice job of blending that nostalgia with the current trends of the theater. And again, the women just stand out to me so much in terms of what is sort of demanded of them vocally and the style in which they're singing.
But Mel has always done a really good job about giving women meaty roles. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's always in everything. I mean, think about Blazing Saddles. Like, I mean, she was the linchpin of that.
Yeah.
Like, if you remember nothing else, you remember that.
Yeah, well, there's that. I mean, I think that's true. There's always a secondary. There's always basically it's the Madeline Kahn role.
Right.
Right. There's Madeline Kahn, but if you think about the movies, the love interests frequently don't have the best roles. I think Terry Garr's character in Young Frankenstein is an exception, but
right. I mean, you've got Inga from The Producers.
Uh-huh.
No, wait. No.
We have Inga.
We have Inga in this one. Right. That's the other thing, is that all of his love interests tend to be like Northern European, like they're all Swedish or Scandinavian.
He is a type.
He's got a type.
He likes his shiksa.
Yes.
Mel, what are you doing here?
What could that be?
Ula, I'm sorry. Producers has Ula. Ooh, wah, 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 wah. And then Inga in this one. And I think you're right. We were talking a little bit about how he's very formulaic.
And
with
even
his
History of the World Part
female.
One, whatever her name was, she,
right?
Her role wasn't much other than being like damsel in distress. Oh, you know.
Yeah, he tends to stick to those He does tend to stick to those archetypes when it comes to his female characters, whether they are the damsel in distress, the sex kitten, the crone is mm-hmm. another one he loves to use a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think he uses them in a way though where he honors the archetype and the actress as well, which is different, I think, from
which
how
is
a
different,
lot of folks
yeah, because most people would just
women.
Work with the archetype and not even worry about what the actress could
right.
bring
could
to
bring
it
to
on
it.
Top of
exactly.
that. And he's great at actually saying, "Oh no, I want this person to play it because I know she'll do what needs to be done with
right.
it."
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So, who's playing the archetype in this one?
So, well, which one? So the love interest, the young Scandinavian is Victoria Clement, who you may remember if
yeah.
you saw Avenue Q as Kate Monster and Lucy.
Mm-hmm.
Tiffany
Lucy Smith Lucy. Plays his fiance Elizabeth Benning,
the Madeline Kahn role.
What's the line that she describes herself? Her madcap,
her adorable madcap fiance.
Awesome.
And then we have Linda Zuby as Frau Blücher.
Yes.
Yay!
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Which
that's,
is a lot of fun.
That's going to be awesome.
Those three together have
yeah,
been so much fun to work with.
Three very different women representing three very different roles.
Oh my god.
Hysterical.
I can't wait to see Linda do that. That's going to be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we've got a newcomer to stage who's playing Dr. Frankenstein. We have Matt Hangerman. Who's also a med student at UVA.
We sort of
I'm
joked
sorry,
with
what?
Him, this will be your last show that you ever are able to do.
Right.
I hope that's not true, though. He's really, really good. Don't tell him I said that. He'll get a big head about it.
Right. It's horrible when the newcomers get a big head, isn't it?
Mm. And so that's been fun. It helps that he knew how to pronounce all of the medical terms involved coming into the show.
So you play the role, but
yeah, that's fine.
What we really need is
you sound like a doctor,
right?
Also, tap awesome. Dance,
and you tap dance.
No way.
Oh yeah,
he came in knowing how to tap.
Mm-hmm. Well, he has a long history of performing. This isn't like it's his first
show
performance,
ever.
Right? He's
just his first
a lot
stuff here
in Florida before I think they moved yeah. here.
Really?
He's great. We have a really really talented cast of principals.
It is astounding when you realize that all of this is happening in Barbersville and sweet beautiful little Barbersville, and then you just look around and see the convergence of talent that has all come together this summer there. It really is astounding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think, but that's something that a lot of people might miss about this area in general, about how many superbly talented people we have that are doing stuff in this town. Mm-hmm. Like, it's amazing.
The talent is deep.
Yeah, and I think I'm so glad that Four County has, like, branched out in the last couple of seasons and started doing things that are not typical Four County shows, because I think that has made it easier for more talented people to come out and say, oh, wow, I could actually do this
right.
show.
I think that part of they want to still provide a certain level of programming that their regular subscribers come to expect, but they're also trying to branch out and to bring in a new audience. And doing shows like this is how to do it.
Yeah, it's been really great. It's been really great to watch the arc over the past couple of seasons. Be like, they're doing what?
Yeah.
Really?
Fort County's doing that?
Wait a minute. No, you mean Live Arts. No. Okay.
And they're doing it well, you know. It's not just having it out there. It's having really outstanding quality.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that I think a lot of artists in the town have been waiting for. Like, we've been waiting for more theaters to do stuff that's a little bit out there, a little bit challenging. Because, you know, you can only do Guys and Dolls, you know, every 10 years.
I could go back and do that show again. I don't know what you're talking about.
I know.
I'll do that one again.
Go ahead. Break in a song right now, Perry.
You know I could.
He's thinking about it, too. I saw that look.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's been so great having you guys here. Thank you so much for coming and talking to us about Young Frankenstein.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, it's been a pleasure. And we can't wait to have you back the next time.
Yeah, and you can get your tickets through our box office.
Yes, please. All the deets.
Yeah, you've got
all the deets. Give us all the deets.
Of course, you can get...
July 27th through the August 18th.
Yes, July 27th through August 18th. You go to, what's the website? 4cp.org. Yes, and or you could just, you know, call and talk to Roe and get your tickets that way, because who doesn't want to talk to Roe?
Right, you know, Google it. It's all on Google. We're all online now.
That's right. The Google, as some of my aunties
say. The Google giggle.
The Google. Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks.
For coming on. All right. I guess we're going to a list of stuff, aren't we? All righty. So here are just some of the artistic happenings this week. Currently running December 8th, the American Shakespeare Center runs its summer-fall season with just 4 plays. Emma Whipday's adaptation of Jane Austen's Emma, George Etheridge, The Man of Mode, or Sir Flopling Flutter. That's an interesting name for a play. And Richard III and As You Like It by Shakespeare. Currently running through the 28th, Chroma Arts Project features Nim Pedersen's show Synonyms, Antonyms, and Akemi Ohira. Oh my God, that's a really long title. It's Nim's show. It's awesome. Go see it. All right, July through June. That's a second show. Because I was like, really, Nim? That's a long title, man.
So Nims is Synonyms and Antonyms, and then you have a second show in Chroma, which is a joint show between Akemi Ohira and Chuxing Zhang, and their joint show is Personal Truths.
Ah. See, that wasn't completely clear. All right, but thank you. Through the 29th, Cry Baby, the musical based on the John Waters movie by the same name, presented as part of Live Arts Teen Summer Program. That's opening soon, man. Woo! Harvey at UVA's Ruth Kaplan Theater as part of this year's Heritage Summer Theater Festival. Oh, hey, Kevin. Hope you're having a good time. Last chance to see Maupin Town Film Festival at the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center. That would be today, people. Go catch it, okay? Today and tomorrow, auditions for Live Arts Fall Musical Ragtime. Oh, my goodness. Go to the Live Arts website for details. Please, go sing for Ike so he can cast you. Okay? July 17th, novelist Andrew Martin reads from his debut novel, Early Work, at the New Dominion Bookshop. The 29th, Macbeth, or Black Mac, as we're calling it, with the Charlottesville Players Guild. at the African American Heritage Center through the 29th. Seriously, guys, it's so black. It's so black. You have to come. All right, so the 19th, Big Blue Door does improv at Belmont's Arts Collective. 19th through the 29th, UVA's Heritage Theater Festival continues its summer season with a recreation of the Marx Brothers' The Coconuts. That's N-U-T-S, yes, nuts. The 19th, Laugh Your Ass Off Host Battle Cinema, Plan 9 from Outer Space, hosted by Chris Allen and Winston Hodges. Oh, my. And for your musical options this week, currently running through August 5th, the Wintergreen Summer Music Festival. This year's festival is Building Bridges, celebrating the connections that only music can make. Full schedule at the wintergreenperformingarts.org. Today, Kits Carter and Juke Jackson at Star Hill Brewery Tap Room at 3:30. Tara Mills and Jimmy Stelling at James River Brewery in Scottsville at 4. Tomorrow, the ATM Unit featuring Jonah Kane West at Rapture. July 17th, the Ragged Mountain String Band at the Whiskey Jar. Also, the Charlottesville Municipal Band performs their fourth concert of the summer season at the Paramount Theater featuring guest vocalist Doug Schneider. Oh my God, Doug, you didn't even tell me you were doing that. I'm so upset with you right now. Okay. The 18th, Irish Ten's Contra Dance Band Persimony Jam plays the Shebeen. LG and Friends at the Whiskey Jar. On the 19th, the next Kluge Roo Night at the Museum Gathering features We Are Star Children. Oh, Edwina's band. Y'all go on. All right. The 19th, the Curries are at the Whiskey Jar. On the 20th, Spital, Goodrich, and Goggin play Fridays After 5 at the Downtown Sprint Pavilion. We Are Star Children transform themselves into Gene Genies for a David Bowie tribute at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. That'll be fun. Susie and the Pistols at the Glasshouse Winery. Red and the Romantics at the Whiskey Jar. And can I just, we just need to take a moment, okay? Take a moment, take a deep breath. Vibe Riots Vibe Fest 2018, the Summer of Love, on the 20th at the Ix Art Park. And it is sponsored by yours truly, Homegrown, your show about local art. All right. The 21st, Seville Jazz Congregation at Albemarle Cider Works. South Canal Street at Stone Mountain Vineyards. Michael Clem Trio of Five at the Batesville Market. Hey, Michael, what's up? You could come back on the show anytime, really. Excuse me. The 21st, Eli Cook at Wayland's Crossing. Larkspur at the Hardy Pilot Brewery and Tap Room. Former guest Butterfly Vendetta at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. That's all on the 21st. Whew. Every Friday, we have the Pickin' and Grinnin' Vocal and Musical Jam at James River Brewery in Scottsville. Every Monday, Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Seafoot, Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music, weekly open jam at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Every Monday, Red and the Romantics at the Whiskey Jar, Songwriter Night at the Local. Every Tuesday, the traditional session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Tuesday, Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Humberto Sales at the Bebadero, darling. And here we go. Here's the list for Wednesday, because it's long, okay? Get ready. Every Wednesday, open mic night at the Pro Reynata Farm Brewery. Open mic night at Holly's Deli and Pub, hosted by Josh Mayo. Jazz Collective Number 9 at Fellini's Number 9. DJ and Friends at the Bebadero. Bachata Fusion at the Ix Art Park. Stone Rollin' and at the Shebeen. And the Mike Rzinski and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. Oh, my God. Lots of Wednesday. Every Thursday, Lua at the Bebadero. And every Thursday, John Dearth at Miller's. Seriously, John, you could come on the show. I'm just saying. All right. And we're going to have, are we going to have a drop? Yeah. We're going to do a drop. We should do a drop, and we'll be right back.
This is Shelley Cole with Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC.
And it's 35 minutes past the hour here on Homegrown, your show about local art. Thanks for hanging with us. Sorry, I'm getting a very like NPR kind of feel on this. Okay, so we're going to move to our next guest on the phone. Oh my goodness, Mr. Ty Cooper, our traveling filmmaker. You with us, Ty?
Yeah, I'm here.
So, first of all, let's just run down why you're not actually in the studio with us.
Oh, my goodness. The short version? I try to create a short version. This particular airline, I guess I won't say their name or nothing like that, but just a sloppy airline. So I'm stuck in Chicago. They put me in a hotel last night, and I was filming in Oklahoma for a week. And when I left yesterday, it was different rerouting and delays, and they put me on a different flight without my bags, without my check bag. So I'm in Chicago with no clothes.
Oh, my God.
Almost butt naked, just the clothes I had on me.
Oh, man.
So, you know,
can we say butt naked on the radio? Today. Wow. So basically, the life of a filmmaker is not as glamorous as we like to believe.
Not independent. Not independent filmmaker. Maybe one of the other ones, the big dogs. They have clothes. They could shop in the airport and buy Giorgio Armani. I can't.
Right. And buy something like five times its actual worth.
Exactly. I can't do it. So I'm looking like my twin today.
That's all right. So tell us why you were in Oklahoma.
I was in Oklahoma shooting my, trying to finish up. Well, I still have a few more cities to go to, but I was filming for America's Darkest Future, The Cost of an Inaccessible Early Education. And that's a documentary that I came on your show once about, kind of like in the earlier stages.
Yes.
To talk about it. Rich, I'm so grateful that you guys allowed me to come on to really tell the public what's going on with that project. And so I really appreciate that.
I'm happy to know that it's almost finished. Like I can't wait to see what you've come up with. Not only in telling the story of how early education kind of got lost in the shuffle, but also hopefully offering some solutions.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, Tulsa, Oklahoma, is the home of CAP Tulsa, which is this anti-poverty organization. And that organization was founded in the 60s when Lyndon B. Johnson came up with the early Head Start. And so it was a different, it wasn't just like a pre-K type of thing. It was really trying to figure out ways how to fight poverty in this country.
Right.
And so what happened, it morphed, there were two different organizations out there doing similar things, and they morphed into one later on. And now CAP Tulsa, which is the new name, rather, they provide early Head Start from age 0 to 5 years old. So they are the epitome of the example of what high-quality pre-K services look like, because they focus on the children, right?
Right.
But they also realize that the children cannot take themselves to school. They realize that the children cannot feed themselves.
Right.
So their second level is providing training. Like, you know, let's say if you want to get your CNA, you want to be a CNA. They provide the training for you for 2 years, send you to school, pay for it,
get your,
you become a CNA. So they really trying to dig into the household to change generations to come.
So, so you were out there finishing up in-person interviews with people, or were you just like doing B-roll? Like, what exactly were you doing?
Yeah, I was capturing B-roll, a lot of B-roll, but I was actually following the family around. This family, this mother named Shalon. She has 8 children. She has her oldest son is in college playing football for San Diego State University.
Wow.
Her 17-year-old son is the captain of the basketball team in high school. And all the other girls, they range in ages, but 3 of them are in CAP Tulsa.
Okay.
And they're highly intelligent. I mean, yo, this is like a super mom. I don't care, you know, if you have, I don't take anything away from moms that have 1, 2, 3, 4 children.
Mm-hmm.
But, yo, 8 children and doing it right, like,
yeah.
Really, like,
yeah.
I captured some amazing footage just with the kids helping out one another.
Oh.
I mean, it wasn't for the camera. They just, it's
right.
Their role. They play their role.
Right, right. No, that's great to see. That is great to see. So, you were way late on the way back from that, but we also want to talk about your new film that you just finished editing, right? Mingle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mingle. Mingle was fun. That's a lot of fun.
So is it?
That's a glamorous. Now that is when you say that's not like glamorous filmmaking.
Yeah.
That's the part when you actually have a fund, when your friend, when you're not wealthy enough, but your one of your friends are wealthy enough to own a loft in New York City on 67th and Central Park West and allow you to stay there and film there. That's when it's fun. That's when it's glamorous.
That's so amazing.
I had a good time filming Mingle. That was amazing.
Okay, so what is Mingle about?
Mingle. I'm trying to keep a lot of little bit of suspense, mm-hmm. so people could actually see it. But it's a short film. It's about 11 minutes and 30 seconds. It's a comedy. It's a light comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And it is basically, in a nutshell. In a nutshell, it's about this guy who has this mom that's like overbearing, who basically wants him to have kids, and he doesn't even have a girlfriend. So you know them kind of moms that try to manipulate you to do what they want. They
yes.
want to have grandchildren mm-hmm. before they die. So,
mm-hmm.
so they put the guilt trip on you, all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And, so
no, we don't know anything about that in the black community, Ty.
What you said?
We don't know anything about that in the black community. No, no one would ever do that.
It's very, you know what? Someone told me that it's very relatable.
Yeah.
I had a short screening, a very private screening, just like a very intimate screening.
Right.
And
I wasn't invited. Like, why so wasn't relatable. I invited?
And he goes on these dates because, dating, I guess dating is the same anywhere, but in New York, it's just so, in New York, you have a big melting pot, right?
Right.
That's what New York is, a melting pot. And the whole film was filmed in New York, except for a couple of little tiny B-roll footage that I filmed in Raptors downtown. Mm-hmm. Because I had to, I needed some filling B-roll for a club, for inside of a club feel. So I did it in Raptor. Mike, he allowed me to do that, so I really appreciate that from him.
That's cool.
But anyway, it's a melting pot in New York. So you got so many different types of people. So we have a very diverse cast.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who he was dating, I'm trying not to give too much away, but the people who he was dating all had different personalities.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to see a little bit bipolar.
Oh.
That's relatable. I know some people with bipolar in Charlottesville, so that's very relatable.
Stop calling people out.
You're going to see someone, you're going to have someone who is this, like, germaphobe, chondriac, like, just germaphobe.
Right.
He goes on this journey to find the end result, which I cannot disclose.
No, yeah. I don't want you to disclose. That sounds fun.
It was fun. It really was fun.
So where did you find the talent for this? Did you find all the talent in New York, or are there some hometown people in it?
No, it's all in New York. And the reason why it's all in New York, because I went up to New York in February for a film, for a short film competition, for AT&T, right?
Yeah.
And so it was like an adrenaline project. I went up there. I could have brought a team up there. I could have brought, like, me and a bunch of people. We could have just, like, filmed stuff and blah, 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 and submitted it.
Right.
So on a Friday night, I'm going to keep this short, but on a Friday night, on Friday afternoon, rather, we go up there, and I chose not to bring anyone that I knew. I wanted to meet new people.
Mm-hmm.
And I went up there with one person who I'd never met her, but she also worked for Sundance, and I worked for Sundance, and she's the one that told me about it. Her name is LK.
Mm-hmm.
And she lives in Maryland. So we met up there. We didn't have any team. I bought equipment, and we met people when we showed up on Bleecker Street at the venue right on Friday evening.
Right,
and then we formed out a team of 9 people right there.
Oh wow!
And then so then that night, like after that was over, after they fed us and gave us the instructions, we went to Starbucks and assigned roles, and I was the director and cinematographer. Someone else, and everybody, the writer, and all this other stuff. So I'm a fast forward. So Saturday morning at 3:30 in the morning, because that was Friday night, mind you, like 10 o'clock, 10:30. In the morning, I'm in my bed, and I get the email for the script. So I read the script, and I rewrote the first scene in bed on my phone, and then I sent it to all the actors. And then we started filming Saturday late morning through the afternoon, and then I filmed at the hotel at the Marriott that evening.
Right.
And then we submitted it at 1 o'clock because somebody else edited it because I didn't bring my computer up there. And
so someone else had to edit it? Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So so basically this was done super fast.
Yeah, that was done fast. But what happened was that when it screened that that Sunday afternoon, on one of the actors after the screen, you know, people liked it. After the screen though, someone, and it had to be 5 minutes. It couldn't be no longer than 5 minutes. So one of my actors said, "Ty, you think you could re-edit it for us and then submit it to film festivals?" And I said, "Nah." I said, "I could reshoot the whole thing and then edit it and then resubmit it to film festivals. So it could be longer than 5 minutes and it could be just a whole new look."
Yeah.
And that's what happened. So in April, that was February. In April, I went back up there and I used the same cast because, you know, we kind of like, we considered ourselves as the Mingle family.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? It started, we came together so organically, we didn't want to add other actors in there.
No,
or
I get
change
that.
It up.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. So we shot in April at my friend's loft in, on Central Park West. And, you know, and I did the editing on Facebook Live. So I was on Facebook Live for 18 days.
I remember seeing those per day,
just to kind of get people attached to it in a way. You know, I'm a marketer. I'm a marketer first. So, you know, I'm a marketer before I'm a creator. So, you know, so my goal was like, so just get people connected, let people know about Mingle, what I'm doing. So then when we work the film festival circuit that we're doing right now, we just submitted to 8 film festivals so far in Moore County. And so I'm hoping that people can like really be checking for it. They know about it, you know, and I just want to kind of let it flow, you know, like a snowball effect.
So, We're gonna take a break and pay a bill, and when we come back, I want to talk more about the process of submitting to film festivals, because that's
Absolutely.
Something that a lot of people don't know about. All right, we'll be right back on
Absolutely.
Homegrown. 49 minutes past the hour, you're listening to Homegrown, your local show about local art. Stay tuned after the show for the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore. His guest, UVA Associate Professor of Public Health Sciences and Public Policy, Carolyn Engelhard, talking about the ACA and Medicaid expansion in Virginia. Wow. All right. So right now we here on Homegrown are talking to filmmaker, promoter, entrepreneur Ty Cooper about his new film, Mingle, that is about to hit the circuit of film festivals across the country. So Ty, talk to us about the process of applying to film festivals. Like, you've got it's filmed, it's edited, it's all together. So number one, how do you find festivals to submit to? And what's the process of submitting to different film festivals when you're looking for them?
All right. Yeah, it's pretty much a simple process. But you just have to make sure that you have your project in order. Make sure that, you know, that it meets a certain quality, even for yourself. Even if you look at your own work, or have a friend look at it with you, or an associate, and just try to see, make sure that, you know, the sound is good. Make sure the sound is good more so than anything, because no one can really sit through bad sound. They can sit through. You know, they can sit through images that may not be shot that well, but the audio is one thing. So I would definitely say, you know, just kind of really truly look at your work and say, you know what, people should want to see this. I think people should see this. I think this will serve a certain purpose. A person could connect to this. So you want to do that first before you even, you know, go through the other side of it. And once you get through that, right, that internalization, once you get through that, then you can go. So it's a couple of things. The easiest way right now would be to go on withoutabox.com or filmfreeway.com, and have a list of many different film festivals. Not all film festivals are up there, but what it is that it becomes like a one-stop shop. So you open up an account, a free account on each one of those, and you upload the details of your movie, right? You upload the link to your movie and all this and all that. So you're creating a profile page for your movie.
Okay.
It has your credits up there. It has synopsis. It has a log line. You know, it has the actual video. Like, you may want to put the video on the video on Vimeo.com and right. then like upload the link to, you know, to Without a Box or Film Freeway. And what happens is this. Once you set up the profile page, you can search other film festivals. You can search film festivals, right?
Right.
They have a long list, probably thousands, if not hundreds, if not thousands. And you decide which film festival you want to submit to. And you do that, and you pay the submission fee. And one main thing that people need to know, particularly independent filmmakers,
mm-hmm.
always contact the film festival and ask them for a waiver. You want to, sometimes they give you they waive the submission fee, or they give you a discount.
Really?
And that's crucial. Yeah, that's crucial. People don't know that, but it's crucial to do that because, one, you establish some kind of contact with the film festival directly,
mm-hmm.
even by asking them a question. They may turn you down, but you've established a contact, right? Because
right.
When you put it on Without a Box, you're not establishing contact with the film festival.
Right.
Right? Because
right. You're nameless, faceless. Right. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you're nameless and faceless. You're just another submission that they're getting from online. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, to me, it serves as that purpose. It serves that, you know, you let them know that you are interested in their film festival and you care about your project that you want to submit to them, and you want to get a discount. Because mm-hmm. what I tell the film festivals, I say, hey, because I've submitted to festivals in London, South Korea, mm-hmm. Portland, Sundance, a couple in New York.
Right.
And somewhere else. And now, St. Louis. So I let them know, look, I could definitely use a discount because if my film is screened at your festival, I'm considering attending your festival. And
right.
I might have different expenses when I go out there. And I say, if I attend your festival, I'm going to promote my screening.
Right.
My screening, I'm going to promote it like I promote a concert. And I give them my background. I let them know, hey, I'm a promoter for
right.
25 years. I promoted, you know, concerts, shows, film festivals, private screen. I'm a different screenings myself.
But I could imagine that
yeah.
a lot of festivals are eager to do that, at least give somebody a discount because they're looking for content, right? Because they're not going to have a festival if they don't have content.
Yeah, and some of them already have tons of content. So, but I think they also want to give independent filmmakers a chance. Now, also, it could also be a racket. Because film festivals, hey, you get 1,000 submissions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the submission fee is like $40. That's $40,000 in submission fees that a film
right.
festival just raised,
right.
even if they don't look at your work.
Right. Yep.
So that's another thing you want to get it waived because you don't know if someone's going to look at your work or not. You're
yeah.
hoping that they do. You're hoping that they are legitimate. But
yeah.
do you really know what someone's going to do?
Right, exactly.
Your presence?
Right, right.
No. Yeah. So I will go through that. You can also go online and just say, you know, put your film festivals on Google and kind of get the list and then kind of see, figure out what their requirements are.
Mm-hmm.
Because people don't understand that you could easily pay about $2,000 in submission fees. Because
oh
if you submit to like 25 festivals and they cost like $40 a piece, I pay one submission fee. I pay, and they will not give me a discount, but they extended deadline.
Mm-hmm.
I pay $80 for Urban World Film Festival in New York.
Wow.
$80 for one submission fee.
Right. Yeah,
you
and
know?
That can get.
So,
I mean, well, yeah. and if you're not, if you are a independent artist, you know, this is not your 9-to-5. You're trying to make it your 9-to-5. That can really dip into you know, the money you have to actually make film. Like, that's
yeah, yeah.
that can get a little pricey. So we only have like 2 minutes left. We only have a finger is being shaken at me. We only have 1 minute left. So where can people who aren't going to go to any film festivals see Mingle?
They're gonna have to go to a film festival who accepts it. Cause I'm gonna work the film festival circuit from now to probably in the spring, and then you know I'm hoping they get picked up. I submitted to Virginia Film Festival, so hopefully they like it enough to screen it, and we'll see.
All right.
But But yeah, after a while, if it doesn't get screened, or if I work the circuit long enough, then I would start doing private screenings. Not private, I would do public screenings along with other shorts.
Okay.
So I'll, like, Life You're Marketing will put on a short film screening series.
Okay.
And my film would be in there. You know, right. So either way, it's going to get out there.
Either way. I like that. That's good planning. Thank you so much, Ty, for coming on the show and talking to us about Mingle and about America's Darkest Future. We are always happy to have you on the show. And we'll see you. We hope you get back home safe and sound.
Yeah, I'm going to try my best tonight. And go to facebook.com/Mingle the Movie. So if you go to Facebook, Mingle the Movie, you can find information and some videos and stuff like that.
Thank you so much, Ty. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
I think Shane and Dave.
All right. Bye-bye. Oh, my goodness. All right. So, this has been a cool show.
It has. It's been a very cool show.
You're playing Mel Brooks. Isn't you cute? we want to thank our guests, Perry Medlin, Austin Roby, and Ty Cooper for coming on the show and talking to us. You want to do that or you want me to do that? Oh, I'm doing it. Oh, my goodness. I feel so important. Our opening music is from Spit It Out, Inc. Our event music is from Positive Collective. Any complaints about Homegrown should be directed to our attorneys at the fine firm of Tochterman, Overman, Munson, and Burke. Legal services like a song. Coming up next is the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with your host, Rick Moore. His guest, UVA Associate Professor of Public Health Sciences and Public Policy, Carolyn Engelhardt, talking about the ACA and Medicaid expansion in Virginia. It's been fabulous this Sunday morning with you. Please come back next Sunday for Homegrown, your show about local art. White spats and lots of dollars, spending every dime for a wonderful time. If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where the fashion sits? Putting on the Ritz. Different types who wear a day coat, prints, pinstripes, and cutaway coats, the perfect fits. Cha-cha-cha-cha! Putting on the Ritz. You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.